T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome into Beers on Us with Mike Lynch and Patrick Harris. Thanks so much for listening. Wherever and whenever you're listening, it's probably beer o'clock, and we've got a lot of good stuff coming up for you right here on the podcast starting right now.
Welcome back into Beers on Us with Mike Lynch and Patrick Harris, and we are back out in the wild on location
today. Look at us. Look at us.
A year passed on our New Year's resolution of being on location more, but hey, it's happened twice in 3 weeks, which is fun.
Hey, why not? And there's still more to come, too.
I know we've already been putting some stuff in the works, in the planning phase, so hopefully you'll be seeing us out more often the next couple of months at the very least, if not the rest of the year, because we're trying to be more proactive about it. And we're being more active on our Instagram page.
Yes, I'm working diligently at that. I've got a bunch of stuff already saved up to, I don't know if I will, it's Saturday as we're recording this. I might float some things out through the week. I'm not quite sure how I'll do it.
So basically, we're using the story mode.
Yeah.
I'm a gamer, sorry. We're using the story more than we're using just the pictures.
Yeah. I want to kind of fit into both, because a lot of people use stories, but some people do scroll, and so I kind of want to double dip a little bit. So if you do both, my apologies.
Instagram.com/beersonus is where you can find us there. You can find the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Omni, Radio.com, 1080thefan.com, and wherever you find us. Please sub, rate, review, whichever method is in your program of use. It helps us out. And you can find us on social media by ourselves. I'm at MikeLynch27 on Twitter, and Patrick is at PDiddy085 on Instagram. We are at Function, which is a pop-up bar on 23rd.
Yeah, like 23rd and Lovejoy.
Right next to Blue Star and across the street from Salt and Straw.
Yep.
In the hub of the 23rd district here. And we are here today because they are as part of Oregon Beer Month.
Oregon Craft Beer Month,
Craft
I believe.
Beer yeah. Month. They are doing a little couple of week event here with highlighting beers all from outside of the city. So today, for example, on tap, they've got a Boneyard IPA, a Solera Pesh. Actually, I don't know what that is.
Pesh? Is it a sour? Yeah. Solera is a sweet brewery in
Parkdale. That's the place that you've talked about with the like Red Barn, the famous painting, right?
Mm-hmm.
They've got a Yahats Wild Ale. They've got Sticky Hands. That's Block 15. They've got a Hazy from Common Block. I've never heard of them before. And they've got the Brood Abides Milk Stout from Pelican, which we've had on the podcast before. And then they've got some wine as well. I believe they also have, it's on the back of the menu. They also have cans and bottles available from Double Mountain, Bowie, Wild Ride, Freem, Heater Allen, Fort George, Ale Apothecary, and Cold Fire, and Sun River, and Ale Song as all places that are not currently on tap. And I believe, if I remember correctly, they're rotating the taps through with all the breweries that are involved in this outside of the city of Portland.
Yeah, I was here the other night. Because they did their media thing, and I jumped in and caught it. And Sticky Hands wasn't on. It was a different beer. Gosh, what was it? Because I had a Boneyard, and then I swapped to the other one. I don't remember. But, yeah, they have been rotating. I imagine as the kegs kick, something else will come back on.
So we are here to start talking about the beginning of Oregon Craft Beer Month, and we will be joined in our interview segment today by Tony Roberts. He's the co-executive director of the Oregon Brewers Guild. He is here with us right now, so he'll be coming to sit down in about 15 minutes or so. And we'll talk to him about all sorts of things. We'll talk to him about Zwickel. We'll talk to him about they're doing a statewide collaboration that Breakside's involved in. Mm-hmm. We're also just going to talk about Oregon Craft Beer Month, which is starting now.
Yeah.
It is, well, starting.
Right now.
Yeah, now, February 1st, which has been moved up. So I want to ask him about that as well.
I'm interested. Yeah, it should be a cool one. This is going to be what I was. So I run into Tony kind of frequently because, Ben Edmonds does a lot of stuff with Brewers Guild as well. Plus, they hold a lot of their meetings at Slabtown. And this will be kind of a really fun. I'm really intrigued by this as like an industry person, too, as like what we see in craft beer going forward. And, Tony and that crew, they keep their finger on the pulse, and this is Yeah, I'm excited. I'm interested to hear what he has to say. I don't know a whole lot what he's going to say, so a lot of this will be kind of new information for me as well.
Yeah, so we'll have that coming up in a little bit. But before we get into the actual meaty goodness of the segment part of this, full disclosure, we're doing this on a Saturday. We recorded the last podcast 2 days ago, so there wasn't a lot of a week in beer for us.
Right.
Mine was very similar to my week last week where I've got the stuff in the fridge. I have a Brood Abides from Pelican in the fridge, which I've had a couple of. I just finished my Crux Gimme Mo IPAs. I bought a six-pack of cans of that. It's quite good, and I love their new cans. They just feel so nice, and they look so nice. And I think I have one Jubilee Ale left in there, too, for my box of Jubilee Ale that I got a couple of weeks ago. But I have not done anything specific in the last couple of days outside of just having some beer at home.
Yeah, since we signed off on Thursday, I have been at Breakside, and then I went to bed, and then I woke up, and then I went to Breakside, and then I got off. And then I went to bed, and now I'm here.
Yeah,
but I did stop. You know, I did stop at the local watering holes throughout those last couple of days. And well, let's see, what did
as
I have?
You are wont to do,
as I frequently do. I had a newer, or at least one that I hadn't had, a Sun River IPA, Keep Oregon Green.
Okay.
Very nice. Does not taste 7%. Kind of a little bit like this Boneyard that you're drinking right now. A little bit of a throwback, but also some kind of modern twists on it.
I am drinking the Alien IPA.
It was quite delicious, and then I dove back into a Bodhisattva can, which I hadn't had in a while, and a Freem IPA can that I hadn't had in a while either.
There you go.
Those beers suck.
I know, they're terrible, right?
it was nice. I drink Freem IPA frequently, but I hadn't had a Bodhisattva in a while, which is funny because I absolutely love that beer.
I think you haven't had it in a while because, well, it was one of your favorite beers growing up.
Yeah.
That's what we talked about, right, in the year in review. Like, hey, let's appreciate some of the breweries that we neglect because we're used to them being here. Like, we talked about Freem. Mm-hmm. People would kill for Freem beer, and we're just like, yeah, I mean,
Freem. Like, whenever it's at the grocery store.
It's there all the time.
And then, you know me, I find something that I like, and I just keep going.
Cuddle Puddle?
Yeah. I've actually jumped off the Cuddle Puddle train.
Good. Yeah. Good.
Well, the kegs are almost gone of this batch, so I'm just like, yeah, I'm over that. It's all about Bazooka Face, duh.
And didn't you maybe have a little bit to do with Bazooka Face?
Not this batch. The previous batch I had some fun with.
Yeah, a little handsy in there.
I had a little fun with. But these are OBA batches, which is also in February. Another thing I'm interested to see how that gets
wrapped. Oh, yeah, we went there last year, and that was a lot of fun. We also got a little note from Chris Martin, who was the one who gave us the Bourbon Barrel Aged box that we opened in the What's in the Box episode last week.
Which a bunch of you guys have reached out and said you really enjoyed it. And Mike and I were kind of like, we don't know how this is going to go, but let's just do it. And I'm glad you guys enjoyed it.
I will say that there's been a couple of those in the last few weeks where we're like, this is fun, but I'm not sure how it's going to translate. And you guys have been like, oh, it's been great.
Yeah.
So we're appreciative of that.
Yeah, thank you very much.
But he said that he left us in the box a color-coded sheet that told us what the colors on the top of those 50-50 brewing stouts were. And so we are at function now. The box is currently in my house.
Oh,
so
nice.
When I go home, I will go look in the box, and I will see what is in there, if that is the case. I also saw there was a sticker on the side, so maybe that has something to do with it.
Yeah, they're aged in different barrels.
So they were not initials. They were initials, but they were initials of the barrel, not the person who bottled it.
I believe so, yeah. So EC is Elijah Craig 12-year, AB is Apple Brandy, and RC is Rye Cuvée. So I'm really excited just to see which is which.
So now that we know that, we should probably do an episode based around the different ones.
Oh, that could be fun.
Because we were like, oh, we'll drink some on the episode, and we'll drink some in person, like just in our own time. And I was like, ooh, I'm going to put some of these in the fridge. And I'm like, okay, fine, I'll bring them into the podcast.
We should probably do that on a day that I don't have to go to work.
Yeah.
I really want that apple brandy.
Yeah,
I'm a little obsessed with apple brandy right now, in like the idea of aging beers in apple brandy barrels.
Yeah, I had one recently that was aged in brandy barrels, and I thought it was nice. It was really, really delightful.
I think it gives like some nice kind of sweet character to it and some flavor character. It's like tastes like apples without there actually being apples in it.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's kind of cool.
It kind of makes it, like, when you get a barrel aged out that's like a bourbon barrel. I mean, it's syrupy, it's molassesy, it's thick, it's rich. And the apple brandy, the one that I had, it kind of just makes it pop more. You know, I mean, it's alcoholic. You taste the alcohol because it's strong. But it makes it pop. It's just like it's a unique, different flavor.
Yeah.
And you said the other one's a rye one, so that's interesting too.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. Let's get all about it.
Side by side.
Yeah, let's get after it.
Okay, so that was our week in beer. on the podcast today, we don't really have a singular plan for what we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
But I do want to talk about what's coming up in Oregon Craft Beer Month. You've got a list that you have of things, mm-hmm. events that are happening. And then I also want to talk a little bit about the purpose of this event that we're at now at Function, which is highlighting outside of Portland breweries in the city of Portland.
Yeah.
Because I think that's interesting and it's cool because for us, when we're in this world of doing this podcast and we're trying all these beers and we're trying to be as open-minded and learn as much as we can about all these breweries, there's not really a thought that goes into like, oh, this one's from Portland, this one's from Bend, this one's from Eugene. It's like, oh, it's an Oregon beer, right?
Right.
And I will frequently go out of my way to try beers not from the city of Portland. But I wonder how many craft beer drinkers who are maybe not as elitist-y snobs as we have become, who are just more casual drinkers, are like, oh, it's a Portland brewery, I'll have it. But they don't even try to branch out and try the other stuff that's out there. And an event like this, where all you're getting is outside of the city limits beer, I think that'd be a really good way to introduce these breweries, even though some of them are huge breweries, mm-hmm. Boneyard as an example, to people who haven't really explored outside the city that much.
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point on that. I mean, we've talked about this in the past, like why there are some breweries in neighborhoods that survive without having kind of quality backing their name. And it's because people are willing to put blinders on and they're willing to just kind of say, that's my neighborhood brew pub and I go there. And they kind of like, if I'm not drinking that, I drink Bud Light or whatever, you know? So it's nice. I like these kind of showcases. And Function itself has been a pretty cool spot for the last couple of years. It's like they do a ton of beer events throughout the year, whether it's like I've been here for a Barrelick pop-up. I've been here for a Wayfinder pop-up. I mean, hell, Breakside's even done a thing here. We're just right down the road from here. So it's kind of become a cool spot that allows kind of the beer community to showcase. If you live on this side of the river, you don't, and a brewery's on the other side of the river, you kind of have an option to check it out without having to go over there, although I find that lazy. But I still
think... We've talked about that in our Lewitt episode. Like, yeah. Hey, it's not a real It's not a real wall.
Yeah.
You can go over the metaphorical wall of the Columbia River.
Exactly. You can do exactly. It. And so this place has been pretty cool. They have a really awesome patio out back. Last year, I went to a marketing kind of symposium sort of thing about breweries and marketing, and I was blown away by the woman that does Freem stuff. And so I'll kind of always remember this place for that just because it was such a great presentation on her behalf that this place is cool. I mean, it's got kind of funky hours. You got to kind of know what you're getting into. But what it is now, I think it's really rad.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure when I walked in, it said, come in from open to close. It's basically what it said. It was like, oh, okay, cool. They opened at 2 o'clock today for those who are curious. But yeah, so I just think I've got some friends who moved here recently and their first experience with good beer here was very simple. They went to Ex Novo. That was their first place. And they loved it, right? Yeah. Understandable.
Mm-hmm.
And then they didn't go anywhere else. They're like, oh, Ex Novo's great, right?
That's the only spot we go to now.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, if you move from a place that doesn't have a lot of breweries and you find a good one, you're like, oh, I don't need to go look.
Right.
Right, this is the best brewery, right? And then they moved and they lived down by Gigantic and they went to Gigantic and it's like, okay, cool. I mean, you've gone to two Portland breweries and I'm like, they had a party, like a, almost like their own, like a housewarming party, like apartment warming party. And I went and I curated a 6-pack of cans of really, really good beers that I wanted to share.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, I'm going to get this Von Ebert. I'm going to get this from Little Beast. I'm going to get this. And I just made 6 and I brought it in and they seemed so unenthused. And I was like, trust me, these beers are really good.
Yeah.
Trust me. And they're like, yeah, but I mean, you know, we go to Ex Novo. So like, I think that for a lot of people when they first move here, if you're not from a place that has a lot of craft beer, which, I mean, it's getting better, but if you're being honest, as most of the country, you don't spread your wings and fly that often. Right. If you go to a supermarket and you get yourself beer, you might expand a little bit based on what's on the shelf. But if you know you like a certain thing, you're going to get the certain thing. So I think that's why these kind of events are cool for, you know, if you just move here, you're not going down to Eugene unless you're going to college anytime soon. And maybe you go to a coast town that doesn't have a brewery, or maybe you don't get out to Bend for a year because it's not on your radar. I think it's kind of cool that it's like, oh, I'm here and I can get these beers. I haven't heard of any of them. I don't know what these breweries are, but I'll try them. And then you're like, oh, I like this Boneyard beer.
Yeah,
what's Boneyard? Let's look it up. It's in Bend. Oh, let's go to Bend. Are there other breweries there?
And then bam, bam, bam. Thank
exactly.
you,
man. Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I tend to live the like bottle shop tap room life, because you see stuff and you're like, I don't even know what this brewery is. Or, whoa, I didn't see this new Sun River beer. What's that? And then you try things. And it's so funny because despite working for a brewery and a very successful brewery, And I do enjoy drinking their beer, and I drink a lot of Breakside beer, but it is still so fun for me to find new breweries, to taste new stuff. Like, I'd never seen this Boneyard, this Alien IPA. I'd never seen it before, and you're like...
By the way, we're saying it like that not because we're dumb, but because it's Ale-Ian.
Yeah. So the Alien IPA from Boneyard, I'd never seen that before. So you're like, well, yeah, okay, yeah, I got to have one of those.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I guess that's just my point, is that this just helps those kind of people if they come into a place like this expecting to find themselves a beer that they're used to. Oh, well, okay, I'll still try it.
Yeah, like,
and
I'm drinking
the door.
I'm drinking a Sticky Hands right now, which is kind of silly for being 2 o'clock in the afternoon. but I hadn't had one in a while, and I was like, oh, you know what? I will jump on that. Plus, I had the Alien from Boneyard. I'll probably have another one of those.
Yeah, I'm probably going to go Sticky Hands second, just because I haven't had one in a while either. And the other one that I was really interested in was, of course, the Brewed Abides, but I have that at home. So I don't need to have that here because I've got a couple of bottles in my fridge right now.
Yeah, I tried the Yacht Hots Wild Ale. It's very funky. It was a little too funky for me. I imagine the Pesh from Solera is quite tart.
Yeah. Part of me is interested in trying that. But
yeah, I'm actually really interested in this hazy they have on tap because I've never heard of Common Block.
Yeah, I'm going to look it up.
Okay.
You said, though, moving on from that to this Oregon Craft Beer Month, you said that you had a list of some of the events that are happening this month.
Oh, yeah. They've got this place kind of cool decorated, and there's some stuff all over, and I was looking, and they have it. Where is it? Yeah.
I see it's kind of like it's almost like a sales pitch for the month, just all over the wall.
Mm-hmm. So there's a bunch of stuff. Like today in Redmond is Porter Mania at Wild Ride Brewing Company. Today is also the 6th anniversary of Stormbreaker. There's a chance Mike and I head up there a little bit later. And then there's just some other stuff. There's the first ever IPA Fest is out at McMinniman's in Beaverton, the Cedar Hills Pub. There, it's like, I think, an IPA from each one of their brewing locations.
That's cool.
And you taste them all. And I don't know if there's like a vote or a competition or something, but there's supposed to be a bunch of different IPAs on.
If you have not seen that one yet, that is a brand new building. As very unusual for McMinniman's, who tends to go into the old historic buildings. It is brand spanking new. I haven't been inside it yet, but I drive by it somewhat frequently because I live out that way. And it is gorgeous looking. Mm. When is that happening?
That is February 8th.
All right. So next Saturday.
Next Saturday. And then let's see here. And then on that day as well, there's an 80s ski party at Solera Brewing in Parkdale. Zwickle Mania in Portland is on the 15th. That day is also Migration's 10-year anniversary. That day is also Festival of the Dark Arts in Fort George. Mm. And Level Run for Beer, which it sounds like a like half marathon or some type of running event at Level.
That sounds cool.
And on that same day is Threshold Brewing's first anniversary as well. So the 15th is a huge day. And then there's some other stuff. There's Hillsdale Brew Fest on the 22nd, Cask Fest at Away Days on the 22nd, Heater Allen Beer Dinner in McMinnville. Coin Toss 4th anniversary on February 29th. So it looks like they've done everything they can to kind of just throw as much at the month as possible.
It sounds great.
Which is great as an industry person. It is great. Like Zwickle Mania is such a beast. It's such a beast.
It's coming up in a couple weeks.
Yeah, it brings everyone out of the woodworks, and everyone gets excited, and they get on buses, and they bounce from brewery to brewery, and you get tours behind the scenes, and it's really cool. It's really fun. But what's great for us in the industry, and I think what's awesome about moving craft beer on a selfish level, craft beer month to February, is business tends to be a little slow in February. We're kind of in January, February, and early March are the slow season, you know, resolutions, and it's just kind of people get back to the grind. You're done with holidays and so forth.
You spend so much time out in December and November that you got to stay home to save some money.
Yeah, you kind of become a little homebody, go out less, eat better, drink less, blah, 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 blah. People are already starting to give up on that, by the way. and so Zwickle Mania for us as a business day, and I'm sure a lot of breweries can back this, it's like an average good summer Friday. And to have that in February is awesome. It's just a little jolt. It reminds you what business is like. And then in like 3 weeks, you're going to have a 55, 60 degree Saturday with the sun out, and everybody's going to be out wanting to drink margaritas and Mai Tais, and it's over from there.
Yeah, well, I think it is cool that it also affords the opportunity to breweries to have really cool events to get more people in the door because,
I went to that cool place on Zwickle Mania. Let's go there. They have a patio.
Exactly. It's one of those things where, you know, if you're a really popular brewery and you get people to come in year round, then it's good to have an event, but it's not necessary. But for some of the smaller places that maybe are new or are maybe they've changed their brewers or they've changed their beer, and they want you to experience that, to have that event. Yep. It's like, oh, okay, cool. I'll go to random brewery I've been to once because they're having a cool event. Oh, the beer's way better than last time.
Yeah.
I'll come back. So it's cool.
Yeah, why not?
Well, it is happening this month, the month of February. So I'm assuming that list is online somewhere. So,
oh, yeah, I'm sure it is. Yeah, I think you can go to OregonCraftBeer.com or something like that.
.org.
Yeah, that's right.
Because on the bottom of the menu.
Because they are nonprofit.
Yeah, OregonCraftBeer.org, and you can see all the stuff that's happening this month. We might have a in March reaction podcast. We had a reaction podcast at the end of last year's Oregon Beer Month. Because you did so many events,
mm-hmm.
and you were like, oh, I did this. Mm-hmm. So we might do that again at the end of February if we go to multiple events.
Yeah, and there's still Portland Craft Beer Week. Mm-hmm. That still takes place in the summer, and that has a lot of those kind of seminars and things like that
right.
I get nerded out on and love to go to. So, I mean, hey, celebrate more beer more often. Let's do it.
Let's get our guest in here, shall we? Tony Roberts, co-executive director of the Oregon Brewers Guild, is next here on Beers on Us with Mike Lynch and Patrick Harris. All right, it is time for the interview portion of Beers on Us today. We are joined by Tony Roberts, who is the co-executive director of the Oregon Brewers Guild and invited us out here today. Thank you for the invite.
Sure, absolutely.
So we got a lot of stuff to ask you, but I want to start with, as someone who doesn't know a ton about what the Oregon Brewers Guild does, and I'm sure some of our listeners are the same way, could you give us like a layman's term brief explanation of what exactly the Guild does and then what you do within the Guild?
Sure. The one-liner is that we promote and protect Oregon craft beer, and we do that primarily through helping to market Oregon beer, government affairs, so lobbying in the legislature, through education, so we do educational events for our brewers several times a year, and we also do, and this would kind of fall under the marketing portion, we put on some festivals and beer events like this one in Oregon Craft Beer Month, so that in the nutshell is what we do. I am one of two executive directors. I'm based here in Portland, and then Christina LaRue is based in Bend. So I cover marketing, government affairs, and operations, and so kind of some of the boring stuff. And then Christina does events, the exciting thing, right? And membership and education.
And that's your background, right? You're a marketing guy, aren't you?
Yeah, I worked in newspapers back outside of Philadelphia and here in town for about 10 or 12 years.
Okay.
And then I've been doing marketing for various, not-for-profits and nonprofits for about 10 years now.
So you said you guys work with Oregon Craft Beer Month, mm-hmm. and it's moved to February this year.
Yeah.
What was the thought process behind that? And what is the benefit, and maybe what's some of the negatives about moving it too?
So Christina and I both came on board almost exactly a year ago, and I think when we came on, we wanted to reinvigorate Oregon Craft Beer Month. It had maybe gotten a little bit stale, but we didn't have any intention of moving it until we started talking to brewers, and their thinking was that the vast majority of them was like, we're busy in July.
Aha!
That's what he said, yeah.
It's not, we sell a lot of beer in July. Our tap rooms are busy in July. We produce beer in July. Mm-hmm. We already have several big events we take part in July. Like,
yeah.
They weren't crazy about us asking them to do more things in July. First quarter, they felt a little bit differently about that.
That's kind of what I was saying, because it's like Zwickle. Why do we do Zwickle? Let's do it on a nice day so it's not pouring rain. It's like, or we could do a summer Saturday in February.
Right.
That sounds great. My bartenders will be very happy.
Yeah, I mean, that is exactly, the rationale. And we looked at the first quarter, and January is bad for a lot of reasons with dryuary and those other things. March.
I've never heard of dryuary.
A lot of people.
I don't know what that says about me, but I've never heard of that.
It says you're a reasonable and rational person.
Good.
Yeah. The last time I had a dry month, I think I was like a sophomore
right.
in high school.
And I was going to say not college.
Certainly. I went to Washington State, my friend. We're professionals.
That's right. So, March had spring break, so that wasn't great. In February, it just had just the right amount of having enough events that we didn't have to reinvent everything, but not so many that we were stepping on people's toes, right?
Yeah.
So we already had Zwicklemania, Portland on the 15th, statewide on the 22nd.
Which is kind of, we'll get to that in a second, but kind of like the big showcase of the year, maybe.
It really is, yeah, because people participate everywhere.
Right.
Like, it is the only time of the year, those two dates, when you've got breweries in, you know, Boardman and Medford and Portland and, you know, breweries everywhere participating. So we had that to kind of build around. You know, KLCC does their Brewfest in Eugene. Fort George does Festival of the Dark Arts, along with a number of other things. Stormbreaker does Brewstillery. McMenamin's has a couple of festivals. Wild Ride has their Porter Mania. So it was just like, oh, okay. There's just enough in just enough different places around the state that we can build around this if we create kind of a kickoff event, which is what we're doing here at Function.
Have you gone to breweries or breweries come to you to help plan events for Craft Beer Month? Like, is that part of your role as you know, working in marketing? Like, this will be a really cool event that you could do to attract people to your brewery. Or is it more they plan it and you just kind of help market it itself and push it out there?
It's a lot more of the latter. I think as we, you know, I think what we're looking at for 2020 is making this sort of the foundational piece. Like, okay, here's the basics. We don't ever want to do less than this. And then what can we add a few more new wrinkles every year to get where we want to? Because we would really like to do kind of a public facing lecture series. Or not lecture, but like a panel talk or, you know, something.
I like to call them symposiums.
Yeah, a
they
symposium.
Sound fancy.
And we're all about fancy.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, we would like to add some things. But thus far, we've done the Function PDX event, and we do the Tuzwickelmania events. Most of the other events have been our brewers, you know, already existing events or events they've come up with, and we work together to market them, you know, through relationships with Travel Oregon or Travel Portland and Visit Bend and some agencies like that. So,
let's dive right into Zwickel. I want to get into that because it's like the greatest beer day in the world.
It is
that people in beer hate,
right?
But so if you're listening to this podcast and you're not familiar with Zwickelmania, it's done every single year in February.
We have an episode from last year's Zwickel.
We do.
Where we did the oligarch series out at the Milwaukee.
Oh,
break
that's
site.
Right. We did do that.
10 yeah. variants or yeah. whatever it was. Yeah. yeah.
That was the day we released that.
Oh, yeah, my wife drove there. That day.
Oh, it was in the old tap room too. Oh. I'm all nostalgic now.
Memories.
I miss that place. Kind of, not really. The new tap room is way nicer.
Yeah.
Anyway, and so Zwickelmania, yeah, there's two different weekends, one kind of centered around Portland area and then one centered around the Bend area. And then what does the rest of the state do? They kind of,
you know, they do
pick one of the weekends or something?
So statewide. So almost
there's the statewide.
Yeah,
so it's
so
like
almost
three weekends.
Everyone. No, it's two. So
okay.
Greater Portland is the 15th.
Okay.
It's the first weekend. It's President's Day weekend. But we give the outliers the option. You know, so if you're in the burbs, you can pick.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
So like the Clackamas breweries, because they all sort of go in lockstep, they've decided to do Portland, so they all do Portland together. But Bend, Hood River, the coast, Medford, everybody else is the 22nd.
Gotcha. And what they do is they kind of open the door, allow you to come in, and people give tours, free samples, talk about beer. A lot of breweries like to do release parties. I mean, I was looking at the event list. Migration's doing their 10-year anniversary on Zwickelmania.
Yeah.
The place is going to be nuts.
Ten collab beers.
Oh, my God.
In fact, they just wrapped up their final collab with Breakside, I believe.
Ooh, holla.
And they've got Great Notion. They've got all sorts of collabs, and they're releasing all 10 of them that day. So, yeah, the place is going
to
be bonkers.
I got to do Zwickel, and then I might squeeze out to the Gleason spot.
It is my last stop.
Oh,
my
it is
planned
your last,
last
spot.
Stop
oh,
on
okay.
Zwickel.
Mm-hmm.
And I will have been, you know, I drive around and take photos. This year I might, you know, cart some media folks around. So I will be I will be surrounded by, you know, people drinking all
those
day.
Those people.
People who are having more fun
what
than
do you
me.
Mean, those people?
Yeah, and so it's a really fun event because a lot of people get, I mean, it's so funny. Like, I take this for granted, especially, I mean, I try not to, but at times I do. Working in Milwaukee for those 2 years that I was there and being around the brewery, you take it for granted, but people get so jazzed about beer tours, about brewery tours. They love it. And I'm at the point where I'm like, you've seen one, you've seen them all. Until I went to Sierra Nevada in North Carolina, then I was like, okay, this is a brewery.
Right.
But
it makes you feel cool, though. It makes you feel like you're like an insider.
Everyone
you know?
Feels in it. And I know us at Breakside, it's an all hands on deck. Our brewers love giving tours on those days, love interacting with people, and there's no dumb questions. And sometimes you can stump a brewer. And it's kind of a fun little collection of people. Is there anything, are we expecting anything more this year than just bigger turnout as always?
No, I think what we've really tried to do is coordinate things a little more. So, you know, when you go to different breweries, a lot of breweries have opened in the last 5 years. Obviously, it's slowed down in the last year, but a lot of our breweries are still relatively new.
God, I didn't realize migration was 10 years old.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I say the same thing about us, too, but right. Anyway, continue.
See, you have a lot of breweries who just don't, you know, they haven't quite mastered Zwickelmania. So we took some of our breweries who have really sort of done it well and put together a little how-to guide.
Oh,
so
nice.
What we're hoping for is a little bit more of, I don't want to say a consistent experience, because every brewery has little fun wrinkles that make it, that make the Zwickelmania experience what it is at that brewery. But helping everybody to, like, you know, flow is often a problem with a new brewery at Zwickelmania, right? Like, they don't understand, especially based on location or if there's a Bruvana bus stop there, they don't know what might happen at like 11:40 when that first bus comes through, and it's chaos, you know? So trying to tamp down that a little bit, trying to help folks like understand ways to make the flow a little bit better. You know, and we've encouraged brewers, we're like, hey, it's Oregon Craft Beer Month in February. We really want to give this a push. Like, you know, if you have a release and you want to save it till Zwickelmania and that sort of thing, like, it would be a great day to really, like, showcase your beer, showcase new beers. So, you know, we haven't tinkered with the format too much. We're just trying to keep all the fun and maybe tamp down the chaos just a little bit.
Well, some of the chaos is probably fun, too, though, right?
Absolutely. I mean, those 5 hours fly. I mean, you can, you know, Patrick.
Oh,
knows.
Yeah, yeah. And just thinking about it, gosh, yeah, some of the smaller breweries. It's so funny. I will be, Ben and I will be doing the Slabtown Zwickelmania this year. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, Slabtown is kind of like a small new brewery in the sense of there's not a whole lot of room back
right.
there. So it's kind of like you just walk in and you're like,
oh, you guys are fine.
Here's the brewery. Any questions?
Yeah.
You just kind of
want to go drink outside the bar, yeah.
No, but I think that's great. I think it is nice to have, let each brewery do their Zwickelmania, but let the experience for the most part be kind of similar in each. You know what you're getting into.
Right.
And you mentioned the migration has 10 collaboration beers, but you guys have a collaboration beer coming out as well, right?
We do. This is the second year we've done a collaboration beer for Zwickelmania. So 30 breweries from across the state collaborated. It was a pretty interesting process. Like, Christina kind of set everyone up and got everyone on the same page because, like, you're not going to have 30 breweries. It is absolutely impossible to get even 10 brewers in the same brew house at the same time on the same day.
Yeah.
So you're definitely not going to get 30. But in terms of setting things up so that there were face-to-face contacts, through, like, she set up big WebEx meeting for everybody. There were surveys. You know, we were talking to different partners who donated, raw materials. To kind of give it a true collaboration feel. And then it was brewed at the Schutz PDX pub.
Oh, okay. Was it Double Mountain last year? Is that where
it was Double Mountain
last
yep.
year?
Okay. Yep. So it was brewed at Double. The first one was brewed at Double Mountain, and it was definitely I loved the end result, the beer, but it was an idea that came up a little later in the process. And it felt kind of like, you know, so you have all these cases of beer, and it's like, oh, this is so great. How are we going to get this out of Double Mountain and to 32 breweries? Oh.
Oh, oh right.
Hey, Yahas isn't that close.
No.
So this year we...
I call Baker City.
Right, exactly. It's like, so this year we ironed out some of those wrinkles. We came up with a concept. It's called State of Excitement, and it's going to be called State of Excitement and the Year from here on in. So this year, it's State of Excitement 2020. It's a West Coast IPA. State of Excitement is actually like a long-forgotten tourism slogan from, I think, the pre-Tom McCall days of Oregon.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's just this really fun sort of mid-century thing that they, you know, would put in, like, National Geographic magazine and that sort of thing. And the folks over at Breakside were kind enough to create a logo and label for us, which we really love. You'll see those posters up everywhere. So it's JL Mo. I'm trying to remember our designer's name just to give him a little bit of credit.
Oh, James Mobb.
Yes, yeah. James Mobb. Okay. So
he's my boy.
Yeah, so he did a great job. Everything's donated. Like, the canning is donated by Craft Canning. The yeast is donated by Imperial Yeast. It was a lot of fun. I have not had it yet. Christina had a pour off the Zwickel yesterday and said it was tasting fantastic. We're just kind of waiting for it to finish settling, and we're going to can it on Friday the 7th.
Cans.
Cans, indeed.
Cans.
Brewer's choice. They got the option, cans or bottles, what style, what yeast, hop bill, the whole deal.
Hey, so, cans are popular now, man.
Cans are popular, and doing it to Schutz, they can do both.
They can, although not here. They would have to send it back to Ben. So Craft Canning is actually bringing a setup in at 5 a.m.
Let's bring them into the fold, too. Right.
And they have volunteered both the cans and the labor.
Oh,
so they're gonna be over here in the Pearl at 5 a.m. I'm sure they're super happy about doing
that. How come nobody wants to can at 6 p.m.? You know what I mean? Like, let's sleep in, grab some lunch. Then maybe
have a couple beers
machine,
first.
Maybe have a beer or so.
That's probably why, actually.
And work till 10 or 11 at night. Well, this whole concept of working early just baffles me.
I don't know if you've seen how you would get a canning machine in and out of Deschutes, but it's through the front door.
Oh, okay. Then I guess that makes
through
sense.
Through the restaurant.
Okay.
Through
I the thought there was a little like side driveway there that you could bring stuff in the back.
So you can bring, the side entrance. Is that Davis or Everett? Whatever it is. There is a garage door there, but yeah. I guess there's not... To get from there to where we need to get, there's maybe not a ramp that's big enough. So the only way for Kraft to get in there is they roll up part of the front door, and they're going to roll it right through the pub.
And
so
what's the style of the beer this year? Is it IPA
West
again?
West Coast IPA. Yeah.
Tony Roberts joining us, co-executive director, Oregon Brewers Guild. We were talking about this in our segment for the podcast, but so this event is all non-Portland breweries at this event. And I'm curious behind some of the thinking behind that, because I was given an example of some friends who had moved here recently, mm-hmm. and the first place they went was Ex Novo, and they came from a place that didn't have a lot of breweries. So they were like, oh, Ex Novo, and that's all they went. Every time I'd bring up breweries, they're like, yeah, let's go to Ex Novo. I was like, I like Ex Novo, sure, but they didn't really have an idea of like, oh, we can go explore. Mm-hmm. Was that some of the mindset behind it of like people who live in the city don't get a chance to go to these places and try these beers, or is it more just – let's show love to a different region.
It was a little bit of both. It was really, you know, it's some of these beers. We had John, the brewer and owner at Common Block in Medford, up here yesterday. And, like, Common Block doesn't distribute outside of, like, Medford and Ashland.
I feel bad. I'd never even heard of them.
Yeah, neither had I.
So they've been working hard. They got their brew house up and online last year. But prior to that, they had to contract brew for a while. You know, it just took a while to get the brew house up and running. So, you know, there's a lot of breweries that have a really hard time getting face time in front of a bigger market segment, and our Portland brewers don't necessarily have that problem. So it was kind of like, hey, could we carve out the state into 5 or 6 regions and pick at least a few breweries from each region and highlight them in draft, in packaged beer? You know, so that's what we did, and we have at least 1 or 2. Some regions are represented a little better than others simply because, you know, it's pretty easy to find 4 breweries from Central Oregon.
Right. Oh, where do I look?
You know, the Gorge. You know, and we just kind of wanted to give those folks a chance to you know, be highlighted here in Portland, and give Portland folks a chance to get beer they can't normally get. I mean, you can't get Common Block. You can get Ale Apothecary, but I've never seen, aside from the brewery, 4 bottles of Ale Apothecary for sale in one place.
Yeah.
You know,
I feel like Wild Ale Fest is like the only time you've ever
right,
seen
exactly.
more than 2 available.
Yeah. So being able to give those brewers a chance to sell beer, but also to, you know, in some cases come here. And it's also even the breweries you can get, like Freem sent, you know, a Jester King collaboration that, you know, they're mostly only selling in their tap room. They sent a 2019 Cuvée that they mostly only sell in their tap room. So it's kind of a 2-way street, giving breweries exposure and then giving Portlanders a chance to get some really cool stuff that they, you know, is hard to find. And I do think in the future, we would love to send Portland beer that's maybe self-distributed, maybe doesn't have widespread distribution, to some other parts of the state, almost a trade. So your Bearlicks and your Sasquatches, which maybe don't sell as much beer, don't sell any beer in Central Oregon or Southern Oregon.
He said it, not me. So, Bearlick kids, if you're listening, you can drink because of Tony. I didn't say it.
I do. The only bit of bad news I have today, guys, is I wore my Bearlick shirt yesterday.
And
I didn't have time to do laundry this morning.
Crosby Hop Farm sweater is fine.
Okay. Yeah,
Patrick wears his Crosby hat all the time.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's great.
And you too.
Plus, what's that?
Your Allegory.
I got my
hat
Allegory.
Allegory
hat on
will
too.
Be here on Wednesday.
I got my Allegory hat on today. Crosby, on a side note, they make some awesome swag. I swear they have the best swag.
I have 3 Crosby hats, a sweatshirt.
Yeah, I only have 2 hats.
Yeah.
I need t-shirts. I love that zip-up hoodie on you. I'm going to steal it from you.
Yes.
My boss has a really nice, it's almost like a Columbia slash North Face type thing that just up in the top. It's smaller than your crest, just this tiny Crosby Hawthorne. You're like, that is amazing.
And you know who designed this?
Oh, no, please tell me.
Ben from Berlick.
Oh.
See, it's all, I'm pretty sure.
They were telling me, Mike, the other day, I ran into him here the other day, they said they were going to start a drinking game of every time we say Berlick on the podcast, you have to drink.
Wow. What's this going to be?
Okay.
To be fair, Mike plays things fairly even. Not me. I am a biased mofo, true.
I would say you're going to be drinking twice an episode from Patrick alone.
Yeah.
Maybe add a little extra for me there. One more question for you, Tony. Absolutely. And you mentioned it too, one of your answers, and I already had it written down. So last year was tough for breweries. We had a lot of closures. We had some big breweries that had closed. And it seems to have slowed down, at least in terms of what I've seen that's been newsworthy, quote unquote. I haven't seen as many articles about places closing, but right. I guess it's a two-part question. One, what do you guys do to try to help those breweries that may be struggling? And then B, why do you think it happened all so much in that one year, and maybe why is it slowing down now?
So I guess I'll start with B. It was incredibly concentrated, wasn't it? And not just one year, like it felt
like
two time frames.
Yeah.
Like boom, boom. There's a couple things. I think we feel it worse because of how mature our market is, right? Like, if you look at a state that's now kind of hot, like a Pennsylvania, which now has a bunch of breweries, like, they didn't have a bunch of breweries even 10 years ago. They sure didn't have a bunch in, like, 1988,
right?
Like, the Oregon market is so far ahead of the vast majority of other markets that, like, we're feeling the growing pains associated with a maturing industry before others do.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying kind of everybody else is doomed to this fate at some point.
Well, because nothing can just keep growing infinitely.
Yeah.
There is a plateau.
Yeah. You know, there was a great article, I think Jeff Allworth wrote it, and it was something to the effect of, he quoted like Bureau of Labor stats where it's like 50% or some obnoxious number of small businesses fail within 5 years. How many breweries failed within 5 years that opened in Portland from, I don't know, like 1983 to 2013? Like roots?
Yeah. Not many.
That's it. I mean, you know.
Yeah, everybody survived.
Right. So it's natural that now that we've backfilled the space with all these new, you know, that we've satisfied a lot of the demand, that you'll see some of that. The other thing is, like, the demand for beer is still high, but it's leveling off a little. It's not growing, like you just said, exponentially. But the number of breweries continue to grow.
Yeah.
So, like, the pie is growing, and, I mean, everybody uses this analogy, so I apologize, but, like, the pie is suddenly growing more slowly, but the pieces of pie continue to get divvied up into more and more over the last few years, and I think it just kind of hit, I guess last year is just was when it kind of hit, you know, here and in some other spots.
Do you think at this point, like, would you, I know it's tough to say because, like, as you said, to protect and promote Oregon craft beer, do you find it dangerous to open a brewery right now?
So,
like, I know a lot of breweries open, like take Barbie out at Level. Mm-hmm. Like, he comes from a pedigree and he's got good people with him to open a brewery. That makes sense. But if you're Joe and John in your garage and you decide you want to open a brewery, would you advise them against that? Would you advise them for it? Or would you give them very specific, like, tips, like, heads up, this is what you need to be prepared for?
And how much help do you provide to that kind of person, too?
You know, I think what I would say to them is, like, you need to have things that you maybe didn't need to have 10 years ago. It felt like 10 years ago you could open a brewery and kind of know what you were doing and then figure it out. You know, so if your business plan wasn't squeaky clean, if your beer wasn't perfect, you know, you could evolve over time like a lot of businesses do. The margin for error is if not completely gone, greatly diminished. Like, you can't come in with a half-baked business plan.
Right.
You can't come in, like, trying to figure out your brew system and you know, pouring batches down the drain or trying to give customers bad batches of beer. Like, that is, you cannot do that. So, like, yeah, you can open a new brewery, but like make sure you have a great business plan. Sure doesn't hurt to have a really great location, whether it's someplace where there's not an existing brewery, kind of like Assembly did. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, there's nobody for 2 miles. Like, we're going to have in Portland, that counts as like a brewery desert, right?
It really does.
There's not a brewery within 2 miles in
any
direction.
It really does, yeah.
So you need some combination of those things and preferably some capital. Mm-hmm. Certainly doesn't hurt to get you through that first year or two. If you have, I don't know, 2 out of those 3 or 4 things I just said, you could maybe do it.
Well, because
I'm just going to throw this out there. Somebody lives in Beaverton, and the closest breweries to us are Ancestry and Tualatin and the new Ex Novo. Like, there's plenty of space. You can come open a brewery. It's fine.
Did you tell Great Notion? Because they're doing it. I don't know.
I didn't know that. No. Yeah.
Oh, you didn't know that?
No.
Yeah, they're third of their four total spots.
Yeah, right, third.
You know, because they got the spot in Seattle going, yeah, they're opening a spot in Beaverton.
Where? Because it's probably not near my neighborhood, because there's a restaurant that's been open for 3 years, and it's a perfect spot, and it's on a lake, and it's near my house, and I want it to be a brewery. That's what I want.
It's near Nike, right?
Yeah, I think it's near Nike.
Murray, maybe?
Yeah.
So close-ish, but not really. Okay.
I do want to ask you this, and then we'll get out of here. I want to ask you about kind of one of the topics you pointed to on the breweries opening up. I have been notorious. I'm a little more, I don't know, honest, harsh reality sometimes, that... Do you find that the consumer, the average beer consumer, their demands for quality are raising? And the average Joe that just buys whatever at a grocery store are starting to diminish? Because I would argue 90 to maybe even 100% of the breweries that have closed in the last 2 years had quality concerns.
Mm-hmm. I think that this speaks to why Portland is feeling the pinch earlier. I think the average Portland consumer expects more. I don't know if it's the same nationwide. Otherwise, people wouldn't be drinking, you know, White Claw.
Right.
But
should have seen the face he made with that guy.
I'm sorry. It's like I have to spit the word out. I think in Portland and Bend and Hood River, I think in a lot of Oregon markets, the consumer demands better beer. I think that a lot of consumers even have... You know, they have an idea of what off flavors are, right? And it's not like they can sit here and say, like, well, this is DMS or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
But it's like, God, this thing tastes a little bit like a Rolling Rock. I wonder why. Yeah. And it's like, oh, well, you know? And yeah, I think, like,
Portland. Does anybody have a hungering desire to go to see a movie right now? I want some popcorn.
Buttered popcorn, right? So, I think that the Portland consumer is just it expects more, and they should. Like, I think that's great. I think that ultimately drives the industry to a good place. You know, it's like, we can't sell a beer like this, and, you know, we shouldn't. So, I do think that the average consumer here is better. I mean, are they better in Columbus, Ohio? I don't know.
But
they're in Ohio.
Well, you mentioned it, 1988, right? There's way more years of experience here now than some of those other places.
West Coast, best coast.
All right, let's take a break. You want to stick around for Beer of the Week coming up next?
Sure, if you guys don't mind.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'd love to have you.
Great.
That's next here on Beers and Us with Mike Lynch and Patrick Harris and Tony Roberts.
Thank you.
Beer of the Week time here on Beers and Us with Mike Lynch and Patrick Harris. And... we've got ourselves quite an interesting beer in front of us.
Whoa.
And
I think the beer in front of us is totally fine. You are the one that's scared.
I am scared.
There you
scared
go.
Of peaches?
There we go.
I'm scared of sours.
Oh, this is...
I'm getting better at sours,
this is
but I'm
beginner's
still scared.
This is...
I smelled it and my teeth puckered up. Tony Roberts joining us again, by the way. Were you the one who chose this beer?
And Patrick chose
no,
this
beer. I did. I chose a different one.
I went
one.
To the bathroom and we had a beer chosen when I came back.
Yes, so. Mike and I chose one, and then I walked up and Christina was like, So I was like, okay, good enough, and grabbed a different one.
So the beer we have today is Cold Fire's, I'm going to say, I assume this is Fetter.
Foder
on Pesh, farmhouse style ale aged on peaches.
So a fooder is this totally cool thing. When I get old and gray, I really want...
Oh, it's the piece of equipment, right?
Yeah, I really want to... I own some property on the Olympic Peninsula in the Olympic National Forest, kind of right there. Like, my parents own it. It's undeveloped. It's a small lot of land, but it kind of sits up on a hill. And I so desperately want to build a hobbit house in it, you know, like an underground insulated with a bunch of rooms and stuff, and then grow a bunch of fruit, bunch of chronic... and have Fooders and make sour beer and watch sports and make music and just retire out there.
That sounds like a nice life.
So a Fooder, it's like a giant wood fermenter. And a lot of places like Degard is notorious for this. A lot of like the old traditional ways to do wild ales is this beer will never touch stainless steel sort of thing until it gets to like if you keg it off or something like that. But it goes from barrels into the Fooder, excuse me, the reverse. And yeah, it's just kind of cool. It's an old traditional way.
Delicate peach tones quickly brighten with a little help from one of our mixed cultures. Flavors of soft, ripe fruit with a mild funk and refreshing acidity that's sure to please those who love wild ales. This is the second time Coldfire has been featured on the podcast. I brought a beer in from them many moons ago. I want to say like way back in the first 20 episodes as one of our beers of the week. So this is the second time they've been featured out of Eugene. And there's actual like chunks of peaches in the beer. Like there's not, I shouldn't say chunks. There's little residue of peaches in here, which is pretty neat.
And what does that mean, Tony?
That it's made with real peaches.
Mm. Awesome.
That's good.
I'm going to call the
real ingredients are important.
They are. I'm going to call the description spot on. I was going to say delicate. You know, I think the funk is not super pronounced. It's sort of just enough to keep it interesting. I like it.
I find the Brett strain quite silky. A delicate, I think, as you were saying, is a great term. It's there, but it's blended in. It doesn't necessarily need to be prominent, but is a feature focal point. I think this is really cool.
I think, too, actually.
Yeah, see.
Exactly.
What we haven't done, Mike, is we have not given you, like, a rare barrel. If we give you a rare barrel, you might die.
Well, so I talked about this a while ago. I went down to Degard. My wife brought me there, not knowing it was all sours and or mostly sours.
It's like the first time I ever went to Cascade. I was like, "I'll have your IPA," and everybody looked at me like I was weird.
Well, it was a birthday surprise. She brought me down to Pacific City's Pelican, and then we drove up to Cannon Beach, is where we were staying, and we stopped at Degard, and we stopped at the Pelican, and then we stopped at North Coast or Public Coast when we got to Cannon Beach, and we pulled up to Degard, and I was like, "Oh, boo. What have you done?" And I went in, but I was like, you know what? I'm going to have an open mind. I've been doing the podcast. I've been trying more beers. And I freaking loved them all. Yeah, like, great. Universally, the ones that I had, I loved. And this one smells really sour, but it does not taste really sour. And I think the mild funk on the label where it says mildly funky, yeah, it's mostly just a tasty kind of sweet peach-flavored beer. I like it. I actually like it a lot.
I don't know, Tony, if you feel this way too, but I would like to see a lot more sours in this direction. The problem is I feel like the average consumer wants that strip the lacquer off your teeth kind of sour.
Like a kettle sour?
Yeah. I mean, just something that just wants to just punch you in your jowls.
Which is frustrating to me because I love, if you look at the direction that I think Cascade has gone the last couple years, with really like, really, really tricking the flavors out. Like, there's a lot of nuance. There's a lot more nuance, I think, because I think that, yeah, some sour beers, it's just like, okay, you went to great lengths to use these different sorts of fruits or whatever's in this beer, but, like, I don't taste them.
Yeah.
All I taste is probably what you're associating, Mike, is that sour, you know, like OD on lactobacillus or whatever.
Like I'm having a warhead.
Yeah.
High acidity.
right, yeah. Exactly. Whereas, as I think a sour like this, that it's like, hey, this is there's peaches in this beer. Mm-hmm. I want to taste a little peach. I want to taste a little cherry or whatever's in the beer. And I think that a more mild sour like this, like, really lets the fruit shine. I think it's great.
Is this the kind of style of beer that you think, I'm just having this thought now, that could break into that White Claw territory of the hard seltzer where it's fruity, but it's not too funky, it's not too sour? Or is it too strange of an idea that people will always be a little bit nervous about it?
And I don't know why people drink White Claw.
I actually think it's the reverse of that. I think White Claw has broken into this person drinker.
Really?
Mm-hmm. So it's a negative.
I do because this is heavier.
Yeah.
That's true. So the White Claw drinker is like 100% just 10 calories. It's good for me.
Well, I don't think it's that. I think it's low flavor profile. I think it's lazy drinking. It's drinking to get drunk, and I would say that as beer drinkers, I mean, obviously we get drunk when we drink beer, but I mean, I've been clamoring if someone can make an IPA that tastes like Pallet Jack, that is 0.0% ABV, I will not only buy it, I will invest in that brewery, and I will drink that S all day, every day. The thing is I think when
when Heineken's making that beer, you don't want it.
I'm not interested in that. No, no, I'm
not.
It does
not taste like Ballot Jack.
Yeah. But I think a lot of that kind of stuff, I think seltzer drinkers are lazy drinkers because they want to get drunk. And I think some of those people that drink alcohol that want to get drunk, there's something about sours that lend to them. And I think it's the sweetness, it's the candy-esque, it's the fruit-forward. Like, look at the black market. You can trade a fruit-forward sour ale, and the tartar it is, the more you can get for it. And that's what people go gaga for.
Well, when I was in college drinking to get drunk, we had Four Locos. I didn't have to worry about the White Claws, no laws.
So did we until a bunch of kids at one of our neighboring schools killed themselves off it, so they don't do
I
that
remember
anymore.
That. Well, it wasn't just there. There were multiple deaths with that drink. But that's what we chose, not White Claw.
But I am curious, Tony. We ask people this all the time, as we're talking about, like, seltzers and things like that and these sour beers. Where do you see... What do you see in 2020 in terms of trends? We've seen hazy IPAs really big over the last couple of years. 2019 was a big breakthrough for lagers, for
you're
the consumer.
You're the crispy boy.
The crispy boys, as we like to laugh about, you know, that brewers always wanted to make them. They always drank them. But I feel in 2019, the consumer really dove towards. What do you see 2020, 21, or even going forward as the big thing?
I guess I wanted to say pilsners, but you're right. That was kind of 2019, wasn't it?
I don't think it's slowing down.
Yeah. You can have a continuation.
Yeah, yeah, I think it could be because hazies were a solid 2.5-3 years.
Right. I think what will be interesting to see is will pilsners start to evolve, right? Because IPA lived this life of, like, this is an IPA.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Bridgeport or whatever, right?
Yeah.
That was 25 years ago.
It's the truth.
Right, and now an IPA is Pallet Jack or whatever, or it's a hazy IPA or whatever you want to call it. Will pilsners start to live that sort of life? Like, folks will start to perfect pilsner. So now, will there be a...
Now we got to screw it up.
What was the thing we laugh about?
What is the thing we laugh about? We've been working for 200 years to make IPAs clear again. Let's make it hazy.
Well, I mean, you know, think of, like, have you ever had My Antonia from Dogfish Head?
It's
ridiculously hoppy pilsner, right? It's a pilsner that tastes arguably as much or more like some IPAs than a pilsner does.
And over the next 2 years, do we start to see pilsners, go in all these different directions? I don't think we're there yet because I don't think we've reached peak American pilsner or whatever we want to call it. But, man, I think we've got some breweries in town, not just in town but in Oregon. They're just dialing it in.
Well, Patrick's prediction is that the West Coast IPA is going to come back. As we've gone away from the bitterness, we're going to go back towards the bitterness.
It's kind of already happening, don't you
think?
I think
it's kind of living up to that. But I think also the Boneyard one that we had, it's kind of a mix. It's like a little bit of a bitter West Coast IPA, but a little bit more of a kind of multi-forward new age IPA. I wonder if we'll see more of mixes of that, too.
Like a little juicy, a little bitter, a little juicy, a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how I feel the West Coast IPA grew up, right? I mean, I don't know what a West Coast IPA was in the late 90s, but it wasn't...
I don't know if it existed.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It wasn't what it was about. I mean, can we say it's like a post-Russian River thing? Like, did they...
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
I think that's fair.
So, you know, in and of itself, the West Coast IPA almost feels like a little bit of an evolution, you know? So I would agree with you, though. I think we're going to see more of that. But yeah, maybe we do see a juicy West Coast IPA. Maybe we'll have a name for it. I don't know.
Just don't say the word juicy. Just say new age, right? Juicy to me is like the orange juice pulpy hazy IPA. Like,
but I mean, it doesn't. It, juicy clearly not hazy. It's not. I mean, they don't have to be.
Stop.
If you've listened to the podcast, which I know you have before, you know how we feel.
I think, I'm going to go with West Coast IPA and Pilsner. I think those are safe bets, but could something come out of the woodwork? I don't know.
I like the concept of the Pilsner that you were talking about. Yeah, like, I don't think we are there in terms of mastering the, quote, American Pilsner. But that is interesting to see what can go with it, because there's things out there. You know, one of my favorite beers of last year was Sean at Von Ebert's Agostini. I thought that Pilsner was awesome.
Okay.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Okay.
It is an Italian style, whatever the hell
dry
that hopped. Means.
Dry yeah, hop yeah. Pilsner, right?
Yeah, and the hop character on it is fantastic. Yeah. I mean, I had a can of Freem Pilsner, just their house Pilsner the other day, and it's so hoppy. We had to kill half a keg of Breakside Pilsner last night at work, and we put it on. Everybody was trying it. Everybody, because we don't carry it that often down there, and we put it on, and everyone's got, you know, little tasters, and we're smelling it. And me and one of my servers, we both smelled it at the same time. We just looked at it, and we're like, oh, my God, that's it. That's the smell. You know, and I think, so I haven't thought about it. I'm interested in that concept of taking Pilsners once we get it to where it is, where it can go. Because I truly believe that if you bring some Germans over here and you throw a Freem Pilsner in their face, they're going to be like, what is this trash?
They probably, yeah. But man, I love it.
I love it too.
And I, you know, I would even argue, I know a lot of people think of Peter Allen as being a more traditional Pilsner, but like if you taste it next to a true German Pilsner, like Peter Allen's got some really nice bitterness on the back end. Maybe it's just my palate, but I love it. Pilsner.
That Peter Allen Pilsner is climbing my charts. It's one of the best Pilsners in town, but one of my favorite beers. Well,
absolutely.
Whenever Patrick brings in a classic German beer alongside the Americanized version of it, it is so different.
It's so different.
Well, it traveled. It could, you know, if it's not.
But that's true. But I still feel like.
Do you want to teach a class on oxidation? Here's this beer.
But when you still taste it, you're like, oh, these flavors are only going to be in this German style where we have transitioned into, like, let's get hops in here because we all like hops. So,
What brewery do you think skews closest to more traditional German?
Occidental.
Yeah, I agree.
Occidental. And then, of course, they just put out their Northwest Pilsner, which I haven't chatted with them, and I don't mean to just assume, but I have a strong feeling that it is fairly similar to their fresh hop Pilsner they put out.
Well, they
just
also
with not
they,
fresh hops.
It was a collab with a certain brewery in Southeast, which will remain nameless so Patrick doesn't get drunk, but that likes to brew with hops. So, I would assume there's a little bit of hop character in that beer.
Yeah, but I mean, I would say those are the guys. Yeah, I mean, like Heater Allen, Zoigle House, but I mean, they take liberties. Yeah. I mean, they still love their hops too.
Was going to say Zoigle to your answer, just from the beers that I've had.
I mean, I wouldn't call them a lager brewery per se, but I mean, Freem still loves their hops, and they take a lot of liberties with their lagers. You know, I think we're guilty of it as well on some stuff.
No, I don't think you need to say guilty.
Yeah.
I mean, I love it. That's the beer I love.
Yeah,
I mean,
and
a little bit hoppier than German.
Yeah, I think that's what's interesting. I mean, that's the benefit of being in Oregon and the Pacific Northwest in general. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's going to do it for the podcast today. Tony, thanks so much for sitting in with us and having us out here. You can find us Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, OmniRadio.com, 1080TheFan.com. Instagram.com/BeersAndUs is our Instagram page. We'll be posting more stories there as well as regular old-fashioned pictures to promote the podcast. Our personal pages, I'm at MikeLynch27 on Twitter. Patrick's at PDD085 on Instagram. OregonCraftBeer.org. Is where you can find the Brewers Guild website.
And at Oregon Craft Beer for social media.
There you go. Not sure what we're doing next week.
I'm going to call the Ruse Boys.
Well, not sure. Okay, we could do on locations back-to-back. We were going to do Ruse Occidental also, as we mentioned.
Oh, yeah.
Was
Those
interested
guys
in having us out as well.
Yeah.
And again, I've teased it for like half a year now, but I know Dave Fleming wants to bring us to Oregon City.
Oh, yeah, we're supposed to hang out with Dave.
And go to multiple Oregon City.
You
want to
get drunk all day with Dave Fleming?
I'm a fan of the Oregon City. I'm a fan of the little Oregon City Ale Trail they have going on down there. I like was Coin Toss and Chatter Oak right across the street from each other. Oregon City Brewing, and I mean, if
Feckin,
you're really
rest
gonna,
in peace, Feckin Brewery, rest in peace.
But if you guys really want to party, you know, get a DD and head out to Ben Shovel too.
Yeah,
I guarantee they've got a good IPA on draft out at their little temporary tap room. You know, go for it.
Well, we would definitely need a DD. My wife is out of town right now, but whenever we do the Oregon City one, she will be our DD.
Perfect.
And that'll be coming up at some point. I know we've teased it forever, but it's just what we do.
also a big thank to Function here, Function PDX, for hosting this.
If you have not been, it is right next to Blue Star on 23rd.
Yeah, not only for joining with Oregon Brewers Guild and Craft Beer Month, but this has been a kind of a beer spot for a little bit now. And
Wolves and People is coming back, I think, in the near future. Check out Function PDX. You'll be able to see the whole list.
It's great. So we'll see you guys next week. Sierra Nevada Pale Ale.
Whoa. Traces.
We'll be right back.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.